right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Ridley Scott's House of Gucci, starring Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Jared Leto, Jeremy Irons, Al Pacino, Selma Hayek, Jack Huston. This movie has been one of my most anticipated movies of the year, and I am so excited to finally be talking about it. Joining me is Joe Black. You've heard him here on the show before, and we have been planning on doing this one for a while now, and we have a great conversation coming up for you. So before we get to that, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts if you like what we do. 5 stars is awesome. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget about our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, which actually I'll be posting our Licorice Pizza episode very soon that Joe and I also recorded the same day we did this House of Gucci episode. So that's going up early on there, and then it'll eventually hit the main feed when the movie's in wide release. But we post all kinds of other stuff there too, as well as bonus content from Awesome Movie Year and from my music career. Lots of great stuff. Check it out, patreon.com/bydavidrosen. And, of course, just make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts, because we have episodes and episodes and episodes coming your way. Lots of movies to cover, so make sure you're subscribed. So, let's talk about House of Gucci. All right, Joe Black is back with us for a movie that we both had been looking forward to for a long time. Joe, how's it going?
Oh, it's going terrific, going terrific. Lots to talk about today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I always ask my guests lately if the movie we're about to talk about is one they had been looking forward to. And I know it is for you, not just because we've talked, but because you are a huge Lady Gaga fan. Of course, the first time you were on this podcast was for A Star Is Born. But as far as the story is concerned, as far as Ridley Scott is concerned, I mean, did you have high hopes for it? Did you think this was going to work out, this particular movie?
I admit that I'm so blinded by my love of her that, like, it wasn't until, like, the Braun logo came up that I was like, oh, wait, this is a Ridley Scott movie.
Right.
What was I thinking? true crime stories I always find to be kind of, like, gross. I don't know. Like, I'm not into them. But what I was looking forward to, based on the trailer especially, what I loved about A Star Is Born and her performance in it was how natural it was.
Yeah.
And I was kind of looking forward to this one based on the trailer for her going like full, like
totally the opposite.
Yeah. Like, you know, Faye Dunaway, you know, like Mommy Dearest, you know, like crazy. And it shows how narrow my vision is, because at the end of the movie, what I ended up liking the most was how natural her performance was as one of these people. You know what I mean? There was no, I did not give her enough credit, you know, and I let the trailer dictate what I thought the movie was going to be, which, you know, after more than 3 decades of this shit, you'd think that I'd know not to do that.
We shouldn't even be watching trailers anymore, to be honest.
I actually have been avoiding, especially watching them online. Like, you know what I mean? It's inevitable seeing them when I go into theater. I've got a buddy, Vincent, who he does this thing where he like looks away. And sometimes I like plug his ears if it's like a big one coming up that he wants to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, I admire that, you know, but at the same time, I'm too busy eating popcorn to cover my ears.
Yeah.
So I know you were. Yeah, I was actually surprised how much you were looking forward to this, because, you know, like I get. But that is because of the trailer, if I remember correctly.
It is. I just thought it was just such a great trailer. And the thing that I kept thinking with this movie, based on the trailer, also based on the cast, also based on the fact that it's Ridley Scott, who is hit or miss, but when he's hit, I really, really enjoy the things that he's done that I've really liked. I was looking forward to this as a movie, just a big old movie, you know, and so that's what was kind of appealing about it to me. But also to see, like you said, to see Lady Gaga follow up A Star Is Born, see what she's going to do with her next role, basically, her next, like, real actor role. And so that was definitely, you know, a big draw, but it's also just such a huge cast, and we'll end up talking about the cast a lot through this, I'm sure. But You know, let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. We'll talk about all these things along the way. What do you have for your first piece?
Okay, how about just right out of the gate, I'm going to say The Godfather.
Sure.
You know, not just because of how, like, Italian the movie is, if you will.
Sure.
But I really like the... So Adam Driver, you know, he's one of those actors that is just, like, great in everything, even though I don't think anything he's been in has been particularly great.
Right.
Except for Last Jedi. I think that's a masterpiece. But, like, he always is consistently good, except in The Last Duel, Ridley Scott's last release, I actually thought for once, I was like, oh, this movie's not good, and neither is he. For once. If Ben Affleck is out acting you in a scene, there's something wrong. And that's coming from the world's biggest Ben Affleck fan.
Sure,
okay?
Yeah.
You know, Ben Affleck is my favorite actor. So for me to say that, you know I mean it. But
yeah.
But I love this, I think, is actually his strongest performance I've ever seen him give.
He's great.
He is great. The whole cast is great, save for one, which I know we'll talk about eventually.
Yes.
Here. But the whole cast, actually, from top to bottom, I just thought was terrific. And his character reminded me very much of Michael Corleone, where, you know, he's somebody who's like outside of the family and fine doing that. And literally the death of the father figure, if you will, brings him in, you know, like and the evil gets to him. The thing he was always running from, the thing he was always afraid of, you know, finally gets to him.
Yeah.
And also because it's a 3-hour long movie. So there's a lot of reasons why I think The Godfather is an appropriate comparison.
Yeah, my pandemic Godfather rewatch didn't end up happening. So I haven't seen it since high school. But that being said, the comparison is definitely just. And I would have to imagine that that's part of the draw of telling the story, is to kind of make your own Godfather epic, at least in one movie, not so much a trilogy, but just to make a big family type of thing, you know?
Well, if you remember, you and I, we met in person for the first time when I came to Vegas last year to see The Godfather Coda.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
It was the closest theater to Los Angeles was in Las Vegas playing.
That's bizarre.
The new... Coppola cut of Godfather 3. I love the first Godfather, you know, being Italian, you know, I think you're given a copy at birth. I love the first one. The second one is good, but I don't think it's as strong as the first one. I think that it has a couple cop-outs in it where I get the parallel of comparing like Michael, you know, DeVito, but it doesn't it's not a fair comparison because of how different the times are that they're set.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think that Godfather 2 has... It's missing two key ingredients, and that's Brando and Khan. And I know that Khan is in the very last scene, but, like, it's missing those elements. I actually like 3 more than 2. I hope you don't lose any listeners.
Yeah. Everybody just calm down. It's okay. Well, I'll go to my first piece, and it's a pretty obvious one, I think. It's American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, the Ryan Murphy TV series, which I think is the best thing he's ever done among all of his series, the American Crime Stories, the American Horror Stories, all this stuff. I loved this miniseries, and this is like ridiculous, but when this movie House of Gucci first was announced, and I'm not a fashion guy, I am a t-shirt and shorts guy, and I don't know anything about fashion, I thought it was the same story. I thought it was the same guy. I was like, oh yeah, this fashion mogul was murdered. It must be the same guy, but wow, two big fashion moguls turned out this way. Kind of crazy, but you know, it is very similar though in the way that these stories played out. And of course, I don't know if did you watch this series at all?
No, but when I saw the trailer, that was my first thought too. I was like,
yeah.
Didn't they make a show about that?
You're right. Yeah, yeah. And it seemed like, oh, they're making a movie version of it. But I love this show. And part of what I like about it is how big it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, when we're talking about our expectations of this movie, I was definitely expecting big because of the series. But it is a different story. And so I, you know, should have known better than that.
Right.
And this ends up being quite a bit more just melodrama, really, for the majority of the film. And so it's kind of a very different thing, but still telling these stories of murder happening in the world of fashion, I mean, they kind of have to go hand in hand.
Yeah, you know, big is an interesting way to describe it, because the trailer for this movie especially, and given that it's Ridley Scott, you know, gladiator alien himself, you think big, you know, and it's not a very big movie. Actually, I mean, like, not to sound like an asshole, but like, it almost seemed like Ridley Scott was doing everything he could to make this movie as dull as possible right. as a director. Because, like, it's
especially with that cast. Like, he's got this huge cast, and he's purposefully reining it all in.
Yeah, and he's got a really great script too, which I'll get into with another one of my pieces down the road. But like that gray, like, color grade that he puts on all of his movies really does a disservice to a movie about fashion.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like this is the fashion world is literally a movie about, or is a world of color and contrast, and you know what I mean? And he puts this, like, it's like somebody took like a pencil and just kind of like did a light little brushing over the whole thing. And it was, and his framing is, I don't know. It was really poorly directed in my opinion. And I mean, the guy's like what, 80? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I get it.
It's insane that he made two movies this year. I mean, regardless of how good they are, and I have not seen The Last Duel yet. I know you did not like it. I know a lot of people who did like it, but I'm hoping to catch it on VOD soon. But just regardless of how good the movies turned out, it's still insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting how, like, small it felt. I will say this about the movie, which I don't, you know if this is a credit to him or not, to Scott or not, but I don't know about you. It did not feel like 2 hours and 40 minutes to me.
Oh, no.
It breezed by. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and so much so that I felt that I was like, honestly, like, at that point, just give me the other 25 minutes too. You know what I mean? Like just give me those, just give me more, because there's something missing here. Just give me a little bit more. I'll stick around. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So hopefully there's a director's cut or you know, an extended cut or something. Cause I'd like to see more.
Yeah. I could see that working too. Mm-hmm. What do you got for your next piece?
Okay, my next piece. I mean, I guess I could just go right into the script one, jumping around. Social Network.
Sure.
Came to mind. And the main reason it came to mind is because, you know, based on the trailer, they're trying to sell it like she's like this evil, you know, Svengali, you know, like she's like evil. You know what I mean? But what I loved about the movie, the thing that made me love it, even though, like, on a scale of 1 to 5, it's a 2 to 2.5, but I loved it, was that I don't know if it's the way she played it, but it's also the way she wrote it. She's not evil.
Right.
Like, I fully believe that she loves him.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that she wants, like her father, I mean, the way they frame the whole movie, the beginning, she's signing her father's checks. You know what I mean? She's been quietly running the company for real, you know, and she wants to run a company and wants to, you know, like, that's what she wants to do. And she's surrounded in the movie by all of these men who have an excuse for not doing it. They have a golden goose as far as she's concerned, like this opportunity to create something of worth, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they all have like, oh no, like I'm sick and don't want to do it, or I just want to keep things the way they are with Al Pacino, or like Jared Leto's terrible ideas, or Adam Driver, who just doesn't want a part of this. And she's just like, are you all fucking nuts?
Right. Like, yeah.
And what's so great about the way that the movie shows it is that you never see her spending extravagantly, so we know that it's not about the money. She's fully in love with him before, like when he's like poor and living with her and his and her family.
Yeah,
she is not the one who contacts the family. The family contacts her, and then, like, especially for me, when you see the when she finds the fake Gucci stuff, she's not mad that people are buying it on the street. She's mad that it's junk,
right,
and
right.
ruining the brand name. And I really loved that. And the movie doesn't beat you over the head with it the way that movies today seem to think we need to be. And I felt the same thing when I watched The Social Network back in 2010, that Mark Zuckerberg, what I found interesting is the whole litigation side of the movie. He's right. None of them have any case. And it all just boils down to what Rashida Jones says, you know, public perception, you know, jury perception of whether he's right or wrong. Like, Did he make mistakes? Yes. Did he screw some people over? Yes. But was he wrong? No. There's that beautiful line. If your clients were the inventors of Facebook, they would have invented Facebook.
Right, right.
And I give that up to the script and to Jesse Eisenberg's highly underrated performance. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that the whole time watching this movie too, that they could have taken the easy route of making, both movies could take the easy route of making both those characters just evil, whatever, but instead they made them human.
Yeah. So. Well, speaking to that, the personality of Lady Gaga's character, and you know that she really does care, and she's not particularly evil. She just goes down this particular path. I actually have two Ridley Scott movies on my list, so I'm going to go with the first one here, which is of course Thelma and Louise. Once Lady Gaga and Selma Hayek get together, I mean, they have the best intentions, but they mm-hmm. just end up in tragedy, basically. Yeah. They are kind of just bad influences on one another, even though they both want what's best for each other and they both want what's best for everybody, but it just goes, you know, it goes sideways, basically. So I think it's interesting to see, you know, this old guy, Ridley Scott, like kind of coming back around to this kind of a character and really interesting, complex women characters like this. And I thought Selma Hayek was great as this psychic who, you know, that whole world is such a like a racket, but she really seems to believe what she's doing and that it's going to help this person, this Lady Gaga character. And so, yeah, I mean, just those two going on that path that ends in tragedy just kind of mirrors the same kind of thing that happens with Thelma and Louise.
I agree. And I actually think this movie's much better than Thelma and Louise. Mm-hmm. I thought that the catalyst for the story in Thelma and Louise was so weak that I just didn't buy it. And actually kind of in this movie, if I were to change one thing, I wouldn't show the scene where Gaga is negotiating with the contractors.
Mm.
Like, I don't think you need that scene because I think that that's like a cheap shot. You know what I mean? Like that's just kind of a cheap shot. That's like what you know, the court assumes happened. You know what I mean? And that's a little judgmental, but like, maybe it's just because I love her so much, but she does get to be pretty good. But in Thelma and Louise, when they kill that guy, I'm like, he was like assaulting them in a part. Nobody would be mad at them. Like, they just wouldn't. You know what I mean? But Selma Hayek, too, when she popped up on screen, I had a little, like, a, you know, because I just saw Eternals and God almighty. Like, that's a movie that made me embarrassed for living in Los Angeles. And it's the exact same length as House of Gucci, and it feels twice as long.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, Eternals is the worst kind of movie where it's something that, quote-unquote, should just be dumb fun. But Hollywood fancies itself an intellectual, and and it's just embarrassing how lame brained that movie is, and emotionally just, you know, devoid
just
of
bad.
It. Yeah, it's bad.
Just bad.
But Selma Hayek in this one, man, she brought it with nothing. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? She's got nothing of a character other than her interpretation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could so easily be one note, and she does plenty with it. So she is very good in this. What do you got for your next piece?
Oh, you're only doing one of your Scots right now. We'll come back.
I'll do the next one next. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. So the next one I was going to do is the most obvious one, I guess, is I, Tonya.
Sure.
But I, Tonya, I thought was like foul, like not even not good, but just like reeked. I saw that movie at a early screening, like a night of Australian appreciation at the WGA, so I'm just surrounded by a bunch of Australians, and I'm hearing that accent that I'm like,
were they at least rowdy?
Oh yeah, and you know, Chad Gillespie, who I really liked up to that point. I loved his Fright Night remake. I loved their The Finest Hour. I thought he was a solid director. That's why I wanted to see the movie. And then Margot Robbie was there, who I'm still not totally sold on, but I found that movie was the exact opposite of what this movie was. Mm. That movie was nothing but like a judgment throwing, like it just totally throws Tonya Harding's husband under the bus, paints him to be this evil villain. And Tonya is like the innocent. Oh, you know, and when you see her name pop up at the end as executive producer, you're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, and then at the end, it tries to like do this bullshit thing where she's like boxing and she turns to the camera. She's like, this is because of you, because you wanted to paint me this way. I'm like, oh, shut up. Like, I don't give a shit about Tonya Harding. Nobody actually does. And you just did to the husband character what you're accusing us of doing through the media. So like, you know, shut up. But the this obviously was born out of that to me, like yeah. You know, the female, you know, who like took, I don't know, it very similar, only I thought that I, Tonya was the children's version of this movie.
Yeah, and I like I, Tonya. I get where you're coming from, but it's just a fun movie to me, you know, and I definitely had fun with it, even though I completely see your criticism of it, and I find it very entertaining. But
well, Cruella, when everybody's like, it's nothing but needle drops, I'm like, did you see I, Tonya? Like, that's, yeah. Like he doesn't know what else to do with these ladies. He's, you know, just play some music. Women like music, right?
Women do like music.
What's her name? The mom in that? Allison.
Allison Janney. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I was watching the movie, I was there with my friend Christina and her friend Elise, who like worked for like something to do with Sundance. I don't remember what it was. But I'm watching the movie and I'm thinking, like, man, Allison Janney is so one note in this movie. Like, it's just like the most flat performance I've ever seen. And then at the end of the movie, like, Elise, like, everybody's clapping except me, and Elise turns to me and she goes, oh my god, Allison Janney was amazing in this. And I was like, what? And then I get home and I look up like online that, like, oh, that was like all the talk out of Sundance and all that she was, and I was like, oh, I see. Elise Red. no offense to her, I just don't listen to Elise. But yeah,
I loved Allison Janney in that movie, I gotta say.
I mean, she's, you great. Know, you know, you could play a single note for a long time, you know, just look at the Dark Knight score. You know, and some people are really into that, so whatever.
Well, I might as well bring up that other Ridley Scott movie, and it's All the Money in the World. You know, of course, just a total takedown of just the obscenely wealthy, you know, with that movie with billionaire J. Paul Getty and how he refused to pay the ransom of his grandson. And they're very different stories between that and House of Gucci, but just kind of coloring the insanely wealthy billionaire class as just, you know, greed upon coldness, upon just not caring about other people. I mean, that's where we eventually end up by the end of House of Gucci, even though towards the beginning, we kind of pretend to think there's going to be some fun, like, warmth to the family, but it's gone by the end.
Right. Yeah, that movie did have a crime story TV show version with Brendan Fraser and...
Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, but that added to my confusion of like thinking the Versace was this movie too. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
When I saw the trailer, I was like, "He's doing that shit again."
Yeah. You know,
but that movie I saw right before I separated from my first wife. Actually, she was off having a dinner date with somebody while I was seeing it, unbeknownst to me. that's what I think of when I see that, when I hear that movie.
That colors a movie's you know, response a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah, fair enough. I mean, to be fair, like the whole movie, I was like, man, this is pretty disappointing. But you know, yeah. Then afterward, I was really disappointed. but that movie's gray too, you know. And I like with that gray over, and I'm just like, and there's something wrong with the projectors at I won't name the company whose theater I frequent to see movies, but their movies always in the theater are much grayer than they look when I see them either shown somewhere else or when I have like a Blu-ray or watching them on VOD. like Holmes and Watson comes to mind, where like that just looks so awful in the theater. It had no color to it. And then when I got, you know, the Blu-ray, yes, I just admitted that I have the Blu-ray. It's very colorful. So maybe I'll just have to see House of Gucci again when it comes out or something.
Colorful would maybe be the one positive bullet point for that movie. I would.
Spoken like somebody who hadn't seen the movie. Have you seen the movie?
I actually walked out of it.
What? Why? Did you get to when he uncries, when the tear rolls back up his face? That's hilarious.
Maybe I'll give it another shot one of these days on your recommendation there. Yeah. I don't know.
Only if you like comedy. You know.
Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, the next one I have is Ready to Wear or Prêt-à-Porter by Robert Altman. Mm-hmm. It was Altman's... he had a couple of hits in the early 90s, like comeback movies. And I should say hits, meaning like critically well received, because they made him with The Player, which some say is his best film, and some might be right. And then a movie called Shortcuts, which, you know, many filmmakers like Paul Thomas Anderson specifically is like, how the fuck did he make that movie? Yeah. And so he was kind of like rolling there for a minute. So his projects got more and more indulgent. And His follow-up to Shortcuts was this huge ensemble movie set at a fashion show, if I remember correctly, in Paris, with a running motif of people stepping in dog shit. But it's about a fashion show and all like the all the backstabbing and deal cutting and like, and the whole thing is them trying to hype and promote this like new up and coming designer to take down, you know, other moguls. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's a little flawed and alienated, but it's got a huge cast. I mean, Tim Robbins, Julia Roberts, like, I mean, it's no point in mentioning the cast because there's like 100 people in this movie that right. you recognize because everybody wanted to work with Altman at that point. Sure. So, but yeah, this movie, especially once it gets into the Tom Ford section of it, really reminded me of Prêt-à-Porter or Ready to Wear.
It did
bother me that like I didn't understand the time jump because they showed us a title card at the beginning of Gucci 78, then they showed us 83, and then the next time we're filled in on the time is 1994.
Right.
But they don't fill us in on that until we've been in 94 for like a good 30 minutes. And it's the
That's an interesting choice. I guess that just goes further into the criticism of Scott as director for this. Like what the way he's telling the story.
It almost seems like they cut out the scene that showed us that title card and then forgot that they cut that out and needed to put another one in or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And because the movie is done so small, like you were saying, you know, which I think is a decision, but instead of it being this big sprawling thing, we don't really get to see the environment as much. So we can't really differentiate time in this environment, which I think is a flaw personally. But
well, I'll go to another piece here, and you know, this is going to speak to that smallness again. I'm going to go with, it's kind of a subgenre a little bit, and actually back to TV again, because it is Lifetime TV movie biopics. Things like the Michael Jackson, the Britney Spears, the Salt and Pepper, the Wendy Williams, these biopics that you see the trailer, you're promised camp. Just lots and lots of camp. And then you get to the movie, you get a little bit of camp, but mostly just like melodrama and mostly boring, you know? And that's kind of the exact same vibe that this movie kind of gives you. It's like you still get some bigness in the performances. You still get some of the fun that the trailer promised. But for the most part, it's just a pretty just bland, straightforward story.
Well, that's because how good the actors are. That's the mistake that they made. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, It, from that perspective, if you will, for me, that's the right decision. But like they did want it to, they obviously sold this thing as exactly what you said. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like that trend started with Straight Outta Compton. Like when I saw Straight Outta Compton, I was like, that's pretty cheesy. Like that's like a TV movie. Like that reminds me of that Three Stooges TV movie that Mel Gibson produced in, you know, 2000 or something like that.
Right.
Like, or that Monkeys Daydream Believer VH1 movie or something. Like it had a very like, and people love that kind of thing, you know, like fuck, Straight Outta Compton, Oscar nominated. I just,
amazing.
Well, anyways, but this was sold that way. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, instead of casting Ice Cube's son in his first role, they cast, you know, Lady Gaga, Jeremy Irons, Al Pacino, you know, like it's a real cast, you know, and these people, save for one, I guess this is the perfect time to talk about it.
Yes.
Save for Jared Leto, these people know how to fully embody a person and make them real and whole. And Gaga gets the juiciest one to chew on, obviously. Yeah. But because they're all such great actors, they bring the other characters to life instead of the other way around, you know? And, but except for Jared Leto, I'm not a Jared Leto hater. You know what I mean? Do I like him? No, but like, I don't like when I see something, I'm not like, fuck, I'm just like, okay, you know, why not? I liked him in, what's the one with the, Dallas Buyers Club. Like, I thought he was really terrific in that. You know, when he won the Oscar, I went, yeah, that makes sense. That's good. You know, he's good. But in this, I don't know, man. He was like doing something out of like a Farrelly Brothers movie. Like, he was so obviously in love with the makeup that he just wanted to like play around in that space. And unfortunately, he's not a good enough actor to actually embody a person. Like I said, I could see him in the scenes trying to like think of like, oh, what funny thing can I do? Or like, what funky move can I make or something? And you see him making the decision and then doing it too. You know what I mean? And so it's almost like Saturday Night Live-ish to me. Mm. Actually, Will Ferrell as that character might have been kind of interesting.
That would be a take for sure. But yeah, no, I look, and this is where we differ on this movie, because I agree with you 100% about Leto as a performer and as a person. Like, I don't mind him whatsoever. And I know a lot of people just, it's become a part of a personality to hate Jared Leto. And I don't get that, but I also don't particularly like him that much in too many things, but I love him in this. And I get what you're saying about, you know, about some of the choices he's making and how clearly they are choices. But at the same time, he came to play. He gave this movie that ridiculousness that I was kind of hoping for, the camp that I was hoping for. And when he is on screen, the movie kind of comes alive for me. And this is one of those situations where you're going to like this movie based on whether you buy into this performance, whether you accept this performance being so big. I will mention another puzzle piece here. Just jump right on top of what you were saying there. And I was going to bring up Borat. I mean, this is Sacha Baron Cohen doing Super Mario. I mean, that's what this character basically is. I mean, it's completely over the top as far as you can humanly go. And I don't know if that's necessarily the right choice for the movie, but it's freaking like so enjoyable to me.
Yeah, that would have been a better choice because he actually looks more like Al Pacino too. Because Leto plays Pacino's son. I find it what you're talking about. Like, if that's the kind of movie you came for, if you came for the movie that they sold you, then Leto is more in tune with what you're expecting. And I guess for me, like I said, I don't think the movie's very good. I think the movie's good. You know what I mean? But not even like very good. You know
right.
what I mean?
I'm in exactly the same for me as well.
It's good, borderlining on pretty good. You know what I mean? But for me, the reason I loved it, which I really like loved this movie, was because instead of doing that thing that I was ready for, that you were hoping for, it more leaned toward the kind of movies I personally want to see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it didn't do it very well. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't do it very well, but that was at least exciting to me. Like, it was that I didn't get what I was ready for, which that's not usually my thing, the big silly Bible, like Straight out of Compton put a fucking bullet in my foot. I hate that movie so much. You know what I mean? But I can see where, like, Leto, if that's why you're there, I can see it satisfying that thing.
The funny thing is I really do feel like this movie is two completely different movies in one, because I feel like Gaga, Adam Driver, and I would say Selma Hayek as well, maybe even Jack Huston are in one movie. And then I feel like Leto and Pacino are in another movie.
Yeah,
like,
but
maybe even Jeremy Irons a little bit too.
Well, Pacino gets away with it because he's like old and kooky in the movie.
Right,
you know what I mean? So like he's supposed to be like, you know, and we know what Pacino can do, like when given free rein, and he doesn't do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he's performing. He's not going full Pacino. He's not, you know,
no, he's not.
Jack and Jill in this, which. Mm-mm. Yeah, anyone who knows me knows that I'm in full support of Pacino, Jack and Jilling anything.
Sure.
I'm in full support of anybody Jack and Jilling anything. my credibility on this episode, I think, of all episodes I've ever done. I'm like,
I love
Buck Straight Outta Compton, Godfather 3 is better than 2, Jack and Jill is much better of a movie than any.
Doesn't even like Allison Janney. I mean, come on. Yeah. What are we gonna do with you?
And I'm
Joe?
Sitting here promoting like a D-list Robert Altman movie. I think that though that comes down to the directing, like truly, like I really do, because like I think a stronger director could have made this movie what it actually wanted to be, which is a more straightforward melodrama that isn't playing to broad strokes.
Sure,
you know what I mean. And I don't think that Scott, you know, I'm trying not to be rude, but I don't think that he pulled it off. is the nicest way to put it. And so it's something like Jared Leto, it's like, well, at least I got something that I was looking for. I get that 100%.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just trying to think of who modern direct. Oh, Bennett Miller. Bennett Miller making this movie. The guy who
what,
did.
What has he done?
He did Moneyball. He did Capote. Oh, okay, he did Foxcatcher. Like, he could have done something with this. Yeah, exactly. And Foxcatcher is a movie that shouldn't work. And it's another movie that you would think would be this big, broad, silly thing. But no, he like, yeah. Oh, man. Bennett, where are you, my friend? It's been like 8 years.
Like, yeah.
Come back to us.
We need some more of that. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
I got one more for you.
All right.
And it's a film that was the last film I saw before the pandemic and the last podcast, Greed.
Oh, Greed. Yeah.
Greed. It's interesting. It doesn't seem like people have very much to say about the fashion industry other than like it's corrupt and it's dynasty driven and the dynasties get corrupted whether they like it or not, you know.
Yeah.
But like this film, like House of Gucci, I saw the trailer for Greed and I expected a Will Ferrell movie starring Steve Coogan. You know what I mean? And what I got instead was actually like an emotionally wrecking satire. Like, it was hilarious, but it also like fucked me up. Like, when he gets eaten by that lion at the end, that was like traumatizing for me to see. You know, like you almost want in a movie like this where like when the villain goes down, you want to cheer. You know what I mean? Like, as Lady Gaga gets pulled away from the court, it's like, I didn't do it. You want to be like, yeah, fuck you. You know? But like at the end of Greed, you felt conflicted. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, yeah, like that, nobody should go out like that. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that Greed is much more successful than this one because it's well, shorter.
That helps.
And it has like nicer scenery. Greed is more of a movie experience.
Yeah.
This could have been a TV movie. Like, you know, granted an HBO, which I guess is not TV, it's HBO, but you get what I mean. Like, this is something that you could put on at home and break it up into three episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't have that cinematic quality to it. But the actors are cinematic and the scripture is, but I seem to remember you liking Greed as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love that movie. And yeah, I don't know why people didn't really give it its due. And I don't know if part of that may be the pandemic. I mean, it is a smaller release and everything as well. But yeah, we did that episode on it. And I don't know anybody who really watched it.
Yeah, same. You know, and I recommended it to and my, you know, I have like a big like film circle of friends out here. That's really all you can have in LA outside of industry friends. You have industry friends and movie friends. And and usually, you know, like they, you know, check out my recommendations and vice versa, but none of them seem to check out Greed. There just seemed to be no interest in it.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because it's you know, and the reviews weren't great either.
Mm-hmm.
But what do they know? I mean, they gave Ghostbusters a 61 and the audience right now is at a doting 95.
That all important audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that, David, because when I saw the critic reviews after I watched, I don't look at any reviews until after I see a movie. You know what I mean? I just don't do that anymore.
That's just smart.
Yeah. Cause like, I'm so sick and tired of being called a contrarian out here when, you know, I didn't even know that word till I moved out to LA. Back home, I was just Joe. But I'm starting to really get out of this whole, like, what is everyone else thinking? And what else, you know, cause like, everything is circumstantial. Everything is based on your environment that you feel or think, you know what I mean? And
and
we're pretending that our environments are so much bigger than they are. You know, like, what are you talking about? A review ad? I mean, who the fuck cares what whoever in Toronto thought of this movie? You know what I mean? In relation to how I feel about this movie. And why do I need to concern myself with what somebody in Toronto thought of this movie versus how I experienced this movie? I'm the one who paid fucking $15 to see it.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? This actually reminds me of a tweet I saw today. It said, we was not supposed to know this many people existed, let alone they thoughts. I just think that kind of plays into that. Like, why do we need to know every single person's opinion on a movie? You know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, wait, can you read it again?
We was not supposed to know this many people existed, let alone they thoughts.
I love
that's,
that.
I think it's brilliant.
No, see, like, but here's the thing that I really love about that, like, the like colloquially, like, it's so, that's so honest, and so yeah. You know what I mean, and like, that's beautiful. You know, I one of those phenomena that never made sense to me until recently was that people reaction videos. You know,
yeah.
Until I saw this one guy, he goes by Mr. Video or something like that on YouTube, and I mentioned this in one of the threads on the page, that,
yeah,
like he is so innocent, like he is so outside of the loop of what a great film is. He has, you know, he watched one of the first videos I saw him watch was like The Exorcist, and he was like, you know, people recommended this one to me, let's check it out. And he has no idea about any of the baggage,
right?
You know,
right.
And how he's affected by it. He straight up was like, "Why do you like this? Like, this is evil." You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Like, he's not Chris, but he's like, why are we engaging with this kind of evil? You know, he was
sure,
like traumatized,
yeah,
by it, you know, and he watched this Elvis video. It sounds like a tangent, but I promise it's kind of to what you're saying here. He watched this performance of Elvis doing If I Can Dream, which is, mm-hmm, the big final song of Elvis's comeback special, Christmas special in 68. And it's supposed, okay, to be a song about Martin Luther King, you know, mm-hmm, like about like dreaming of a better world. Right. So this guy, Mr. Video, he actually watched this performance, and he is black, Mr. Video, and so he's watching this thing, and when it's over, he obviously didn't understand that it was supposed to be about civil rights, that it was supposed, mm-hmm, to be about, because he was just talking about Elvis had a dream, and he made it come true, and that's what we all got to do, but you know what I mean?
Nice.
And I was like, wow, that's,
yeah,
really interesting, and then he starts, I can't even remember how he, like, how his mind segued, but he started talking about how he always had a dream, blah, 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 and like, and then he starts talking about how, you know, people always gave him shit, told him he couldn't do nothing because, like, he liked things like Elvis and too much white people music, say I'm not black enough. And he starts crying, and, mm-hmm, and he just screams like, well, if I'm not black, then what the fuck am I?
Mm.
And I was like, holy shit. You know, yeah, what I mean?
This, like, is real. This is absolutely
exactly
real.
Exactly. And, yeah, and, you know, so the reaction video thing, I mean, I don't watch any of the others. I'm not promoting that culture or,
sure,
or whatever. But watching him specifically kind of woke me up to this idea that, like, yeah, like, this isn't the review thing on Rotten Tomatoes. That's nothing. You know, yeah, what I mean? And honestly, to an extent, what an audience rates something is nothing. But what really affected me about Ghostbusters, I know that you already did a one on that, but I'm, you know, is that, like, all of the people that I know who have seen it, and I've only seen through Facebook what they thought, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the only people whose opinions matter to me at this point, because that's my community.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it was a little off topic, sorry.
it was close enough. I'll take it. You know, we're doing all right on time.
I'll throw one
good I'll throw one last piece in here. I mean, it's kind of unnecessary, it's a little redundant, but just true crime right now, the, mm-hmm, moment that it's having with between podcasts, between TV series, between TV movies and miniseries and all that, this kind of just fits right into the world of everything that true crime is doing at the moment. And a bunch of our pieces have kind of fit in there. I, Tonya, of course, All the Money in the World, and all these things that, you know, there could have been true crime series about. This fits very nicely into that, and it's really, I think, maybe the closest thing we have to, like, monoculture right now is true crime documentaries and podcasts. Yeah, which is a very bleak thought now that I think about it. But
well, you know me, I hate documentaries because they're, yeah, lies. Because every documentary is an agenda. You know, even the documentaries that I like, I'm like, yeah, but you're lying to me. You know what I,
sure,
mean? You're, yeah, telling, yeah, me what you want me to think. You know. And that's why I much prefer a movie like this, where it's like, you know, it is fiction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I get to look, yeah, at it as fiction. I was thinking true crime. I just started watching the new Tiger King season.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the first season, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, everybody who calls me a contrarian. I, yeah, really enjoyed Tiger King, and I'm enjoying this one so far, too.
Because I made it half an episode, by the way, but I mean,
for the original,
you know, I don't really, right, watch that much TV anyway. But,
right, right, right. Me either. You know this about me. That's one of the reasons, mm-hmm, why we have such fun communication. But
absolutely.
But what I like about Tiger King is the pageantry of it, and what, you know what I mean. Like it is a true crime story that kind of sneaks up on you that it's true crime,
Yeah.
But it's so, I mean, these characters, if you will, are such characters, and like the things that happen are so ridiculous that that's the entertainment value of it, you know. But something like this is what Ted Bundy did, it's like, well, that's just fucked up. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, give me these Florida guys who are like potentially feeding their billionaire husbands to lions, you know. Maybe it's just because I'm from Florida, but I wanted more pageantry from House of Gucci. You know what I mean? Why set something in a world of fashion if you're not going to be super fashionable?
Absolutely.
You know, the only fashionable thing about it is that it's about true crime.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'll go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and we'll get into a couple of closing thoughts here. We talked about The Godfather, American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, The Social Network, Thelma and Louise, I, Tonya, All the Money in the World, Ready to Wear, Lifetime Movie Biopics, Borat, Greed, and True Crime. You know, the only other thing, well, actually, I did want to mention really quickly, I love how there's like dogs and cats in the back of every scene. I just thought that was very fun.
Yeah.
That must be an Italy thing. I didn't even realize it, but there's like always dogs.
It adds to the Predator theme of them all stepping in dog shit.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this already through this, but the main draw here is the cast. I mean, you already said how great Adam Driver is. I do think, you know, putting aside the silliness of Jared Leto, which I loved, I think Adam Driver is actually the best performance in the movie. He's so good. Mm-hmm. Lady Gaga is great. Jeremy Irons is really good. I mean,
it was just great to see him again.
Yeah, he's not in much.
Like, I haven't seen Jeremy Irons in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the big, that's the main thing here is the cast. You know?
But I also want to give a shout out to the script. Because script really could have, like, and the script is undone by the way it's presented, but like the script really is a smart and thoughtful script that's asking more questions. It's not even ambiguous. It's just so human that it sacrifices entertainment and pleasure for a deeper truth. And I appreciated that.
No, so,
that just
absolutely. I think that does it for House of Gucci. Joe, is there another movie recently, other than Ghostbusters, you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, let's just talk about the big red dog in the room right now, Clifford.
Clifford
was wonderful. I saw it on Veterans Day with my wife and brother at the 2:45 showing, which was full of children. And their kids. I'm calling the adults children because they were the ones during the movie taking selfies. One woman got a phone call right as the movie started, like covered it up to silence it, and then called the person back. She's like, yeah, it just started, so I'm in here, you know. And I was like, are you joking? But it was so wonderful to see a kids movie that had no cynicism, no irony, no like hip referential content. It was just a pure kids movie through and through, and I liked that the villain was evil with like a nice agenda, but was evil. It wasn't even like he tried and failed. No, he was just evil. You know, and I think that's important to teach kids, that the path to hell is paved with good intentions. I can't recommend Clifford enough. I think that Clifford is one of the best movies I've seen all year.
All right. Yeah, I watched it. I did not dislike it. I know a lot of people think it's terrible. Again, it's fun.
Tell people where you watched it.
I watched it at home with my dog Harvey. And you know what? We don't have any theaters here in Vegas that allow dogs. If we did, I promise you we would have seen it in the theater.
Just slap a vest on him. Say he's a service dog. They're not legally allowed to ask you for anything. So yeah. But you, Mr., I gotta watch it in the theater. I'm a theater.
I know.
I've been looking forward to Clifford all year. I can't wait. We should maybe think about doing an episode on it. I watched it at home. Okay. So you didn't get to enjoy, like, when he would, like, sneeze on people and all the little kids in the audience go, ew! Or, like, when the sheep, like, headbutts the guy, this girl behind me goes, oh my God!
Well, Harvey was barking half the movie, so there's that. So,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I house sat for somebody who I was watching The Harder They Fall, and every time a horse popped up on screen, the dog just like lost its mind.
Joe, why do you tell people about what you got going on with your films?
Oh, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about doing another one. I've got some ideas, but no money. Story of an Artist. And, but I'm still probably going to shoot that in January. And I've got our last film, Natasha Hall. I can't remember if I've been on since, but we won best picture, screenplay, and performance for my wife at the Treasure Coast International Film Festival.
Awesome.
And we are going to be screening it in Las Vegas, actually.
Yes.
On December 21st, 2021, the day before The Matrix comes out. Fort Bedlam. And it's going to be open to the public. So, and I think there's about 40 seats. So, you know, me and my wife will be there. So if there are 38 other people in Vegas who want to come see Natasha Hall, it'll be December 21st. I think we're looking at like a 6 or 6:30 p.m. screening, hopefully 7. So,
well, we will make sure to promote it when it gets a little closer. And my wife and I will be there for sure. So we are looking forward to watching it. And Joe, thank you as always for being on the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about House of Gucci. Thanks to Joe Black for joining me on that one. And don't forget about that screening of his movie coming up on December 21st here in Las Vegas at Fort Bedlam. There will be more info in the show notes for you to check out. And maybe we will get a little conversation going about the movie sometime soon here on the podcast. So look out for that. And make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. So that way you'll hear that episode when it comes up. You could, of course, find us on Apple Podcasts or Pocket Cast or Spotify or Good Pods or Podchaser or a bunch of other apps. Wherever you can find podcasts, you can find us. Wherever you're listening right now, you can find us. And hit that subscribe or follow or like or whatever kind of button it is. Hit that. And then you'll find out about the new episodes as they come, because we got a lot on the way. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods. Those are specifically the apps that you can do the whole 5-star thing on. I would appreciate it if you do that. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about that Patreon I told you about at the top of the show. So let's close this out with a piece of music. And I was trying to think of something big and dramatic and, you know, over the top for something as big as House of Gucci. I was trying to think of something like that I could play, and I was thinking a good one for this. I know I've definitely played it on the show before, but it's a single I put out earlier this year called Destined for Greatness. It was originally made for a ballet video, and then I expanded upon it a little bit and turned it into a single. And I released it as just a single in between albums, so it is available on Spotify and iTunes and all those places. So you can go listen to it over there, but I'm going to play it right now. So this is Destined for Greatness. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.